Shabbat Shalom and welcome to Kehilat Tenuva, The Harvest, a Messianic Charismatic Congregation in Thornton, Colorado. You're listening to the Shabbat message delivered by Senior Pastor Mark McClellan. Our goal is to provide, for free, the message of the Torah from a Messianic Judaic perspective. Here's Pastor Mark.
Philosopher Cornel West said of Martin Luther, quote, "One of the things I love most about Martin is that he was willing to sacrifice his popularity in favor of his integrity. He was an honest man, and he would tell the truth. Our problem is that we don't have enough people in this country, including black people, who are progressive and willing to sacrifice their popularity in order to tell the truth." The passionate truth tells. Truth is the great liberator. Jesus once said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free." This is a mandate from heaven. Think Moses. This is a legacy for all who, like Moses, are called to represent heaven. And this is the beauty and splendor of Martin Luther King. He was a compassionate but uncompromising truth teller. And yes, Martin Luther King had his shortcomings. There was plenty of evidence that he was an adulterer. But let's get a context and some consistency to temper and refine our perspective. Made Martin Luther King's adulterous ways look like misdemeanors in comparison. King David would pick up new wives at every conquest in the cities that he would conquer. He had a bevy of wives and concubines. And King Solomon, what about him? 700 wives and 300 concubines. What did King David have? Think of Paul, the religious bigot and murderer who then becomes the most influential apostle of all times. If you can love and respect and honor the memories of King David, King Solomon, and the Apostle Paul, or than Martin Luther King's shortcomings should be no better. Once we're able to understand and allow for, not condone, but allow for each of their shortcomings, leaders from Moses down to Martin Luther King are our legacies and examples in the arena of fighting for human rights and human liberties and human liberties. And these two examples, one from ancient history and one from recent history, inform and inspire all of us who are called by God's name to enter and advance the work of social justice in the societies that we live in. We are representatives of God first. We are representatives of the kingdom of heaven foremost. And then we are citizens of the United States of America. One definition of social justice is, quote, being the fair and just relationship between the individual and society. This is measured by the explicit and tacit terms for the distribution of wealth, opportunities for personal activity, and social privileges. Now, with that in mind, I want to play a song from the recent blockbuster movie on Dr. King's life. This is from the movie Selma. I want you to be thinking about this as we get into our message today. So let's look at a few of the connections between Moses and King. I want to note that they both loved God. They deeply and profoundly laid their lives down in the pursuit of God. That was their glory. That was their passion. That was their background. That's what compelled them to do all that they did. And they were both called by God. God sent Moses to speak up and speak out on the moral and social injustices of his day. And God sent MLK to speak up and speak out on the moral and social injustices of our day. They both had and were used by God to address social injustices. They were freedom fighters, but cut from a different mold. And I want to just explain a little bit about what I mean. When we think of a freedom fighter, we think of a person who takes up armed resistance and uses violence to bring about their liberation. Make no mistake about it, Moses and MLK, they were freedom fighters, but they were a different kind of freedom fighter. They didn't use lethal weapons to advance their mission. They used truth. They bathed it in love, and they used it to bring about freedom and liberty. By loving kindness and truth, they overcame the corrupt elite power brokers of their day, and they set the people free. They both confronted the elite and the wealthy power brokers of their time, Moses and the Pharaoh of the world's superpower, Egypt, and then Dr. Martin Luther King and the president of the world's superpower today, the United States of America. Both of them, and all of these connecting points and more. Let me give you another one. Economic justice related to wealth disparity and inequality was one of their central programs. I want you to think about that. That's a big issue today. That's a central issue today in America. Almost all of the movements that we're seeing in America today have this underlying issue of economic inequality, of wealth disparity. Now think of Moses and the slavery of Egypt. He not only helped set the country free from a superpower who used them to build the wealth of Egypt, but Moses would go on later in the Promised Land. He would have legislated from Moses into the Promised Land legislation that would create economic justice through equal economic opportunity. And a capstone of a jubilee year where all debts would be forgiven and the wealth every 50 years would be redistributed so that the new generation would have an equal and fresh economic start. It's very, very sad that in America today, the next generation, our sons and our grandsons, our daughters and our granddaughters, are at a tremendous disadvantage from previous generations. Completely saddled with tremendous debt, most of which they'll never get out of. Where's their dream? Where's their opportunities? We don't have that reset button in our system. For Dr. King, the American Moses had already come. George Washington. He was our Moses. What was left to do was to push for the legislation that would bring equal economic opportunity and wealth equality for all. So most of the work being done through George Washington and then later the Civil War under Lincoln and then the Civil Rights Movement, we have been moving down the corridor of time addressing these great social ills in America. And this is what's made America great. What's made America great is that America keeps reaching down into her Jewish Christian roots to right the wrongs that are still prevalent in our country today. Now, I know that it's kind of a shocking thing to think in terms of economic equality and equality of opportunity. When we talk about wealth redistribution, people get all worked up and bothered. And the reason is because we've lost to a great degree our roots as it relates to what Moses gave us and what was illustrated in Israel through the prophets and later in the Messiah. So I want to talk about some of that today. I want to talk about what it means to transform a nation by being a light and bringing the ideas of God to the table, to create legislation that would establish these great liberties and opportunities for each and every citizen, and then, through our nation, to the nations. These are seminars. So, I want to talk about the sabbatical year. Every 7 years, and the release from slavery, and the release from debt every 7 years. And then, of course, the Jubilee Year, where wealth was redistributed equally to all. Think about that. Every generation would have a fresh new start. Every generation, our sons and daughters, would have an equal share in the wealth and an equal start by way of economic opportunities and make a life for them and their family. Fresh new money every generation. This would always, always prevent an oligarchy and later a monarchy that would consume most of the wealth of the people. This was brilliant. This was the brilliance of Moses. Now, if we identify with the God of Moses, and if we are grafted into the olive tree of Israel and brought into the commonwealth of Israel through the Messiah, we need to find the heart of God in his perspective on social justice, which includes economic justice, which also brings us to an interface with what it means to share the wealth with everyone else. That's who we are. It's God's ways, not the ways of the culture we live in, but the ways of God. So both Moses, getting back to Moses and Dr. King, both died, it's interesting, both died prior to entering the promised land of their hopes and their dreams. Because we honor Israel's first social justice activist, Moses, we are led to honor the memory and the lives of the one of our most recent fellow is Torah-inspired social justice activist, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He lived and died fighting for human rights, human dignity, human liberty. It wasn't a black movement, it was a human rights movement. If you've noticed in Dr. King's perspective and agenda and strategy, he gathered everyone together. He gathered whites and blacks and browns and yellows together to champion the cause of human rights, to provide, most importantly, an equality of standing before the law for all human beings, and an equality of economic opportunity. He advanced successfully through courageous and passionate nonviolence, God's heart, for social justice. He is one of the believer's greatest models and examples for what it means to be a Moses today. He was full of love, and he spoke truth with compassion. He respectfully confronted the elite power brokers of his day, and like many before him, the elite power brokers had employed their system to have him murdered. Because of Dr. King, I have a different kind of pastor. Because of his life and his influence, I see the bigger picture. That this is not just about spiritual blessings. This is about real tangible blessings in this here and now. This is not about dying and going to heaven. This is about bringing heaven to earth, the advance of the kingdom of God, the blessing to all human beings, not just a few, but for all, and a heart for the poor and the downtrodden, that they would not be left behind. This is the legacy we have for Moses, and we see so brightly in the life of Dr. King. I, too, am inspired. I'm compelled to speak up and speak out on the moral and social issues of our day. I'm for human rights. I'm against the elite power brokers who oppress the people, creating economic systems that disenfranchise the people and enrich themselves at their expense. Let me give you one example. And hopefully in the weeks to come we can develop more of this. It would be great to really wrestle with some of these court elements within the Torah that relate to just basic human rights, and then help bring that to the table in our communities, our neighborhoods, our cities, and the nations that we live in. Let me give you one example of a system that's just messed up. Think of college debt. Okay? I want to quote from you from Forbes magazine, an article that was published back last year in February of 2017. It stated, quote, "Student loan debt is now the second highest consumer debt category behind only mortgage debt, and higher than both credit cards and auto loans, according to Make Lemonade," that's a website that does a lot of these stats. "There are more than 44 million borrowers with $1.3 trillion in student loan debt in the United States alone. Student loan debt. $1.3 trillion. Yeah. Those that have sons and daughters that are old enough, we know what that's all about. It's an amazing amount of debt. College tuition has skyrocketed thanks to the federal government subsidizing, but not really, because you've got to pay it back, right? It's just amazing how this thing has just ballooned and created so much debt. And all these young people going through college trying to make a way for themselves come out strapped with debt they'll probably never get out of, because the interest and how it compounds just grows and grows and grows. Let me go on. The average student in the class of 2016 has $37,172 in student loan debt. Now, if they have car, too, add that debt to it. And any credit cards, add that debt to it. What are their chances of getting a home? You know, that's almost just out of their reach. I mean, part of the American dream is to what? To own some dirt. To have some dirt, some real estate, some real wealth, right? Well, that dream is just disappearing for most people in America because of a system that's just corrupt. Now, let me talk about that just a little bit more. One of the biggest creditors of student loans, you got it, the Fed, the government. So let's ask some questions. Let's ask some questions of our federal government, the banking institution, and our federal government itself. If I get into financial trouble where I cannot pay my student loan debt, can I file bankruptcy to erase that debt? Now, our bankruptcy laws are based on the sabbatical year, the concept of releasing debt to those who are in debt. That's why if you file bankruptcy, you have to wait how many years? So you can 7. That's part of our Judaic heritage that influenced our nation and our legislators, right? But what about student loan debt? No. No sabbatical, no bankruptcy, no way out. It's going to compound forever, and you can never, ever be released. Really? Here's another question. I'd like to ask the government, are you aware of the biblical sabbatical year and your responsibility to release me from my debts? What do you think they're going to say? No. Never heard of that, right? And even if they did, they won't admit it. Number 3, are you open to learning about this compassionate biblical principle? No, not interested. Number 5, if the ultra-rich get into financial trouble, do they have to pay back their loans? Think President Bush and the bailouts of Wall Street. No. In fact, you have to pay off the loans of the ultra-rich and bail them out of their financial troubles because you're just a peer. You're part of an economic system that is designed to make them wealthy at your expense. Now, if you remember, our government made those that were working bail out the rich who screwed up their investments. And when everything was falling and there was no way out, the government said, we'll make the people pay the bail out the rich. That's it. Messed up economic system. That is just upside down and backwards. Totally opposed to the principles that God lays out for the rich and their responsibility to the poor. It's amazing that it's so upside down when you look at our banking system, our monetary system, our economic system, and compare that with what God gave to Moses to safeguard everyone in Israel, especially the disenfranchised and the poor and the downtrodden. We'll talk about that hopefully in weeks to come when we look more closely at the biblical text and how that would play out. But on to economic injustices in the biblical text. Let's look back at our Torah reading today, Exodus 6. I want to pick up the reading in verse 2. God spoke further to Moses and said to him, I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as God Almighty, but by my name, Yahweh, I did not make myself known to them. Verse 4. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they sojourned. So here's Israel, right? In captivity in Egypt, and they are making Egypt wealthy. And God says, that's coming to an end. That's not right. These are my people, and I have a plan to give my people some wealth. I want to make sure my people have some land, have some real wealth. That's my plan for my people. Verse 5. Furthermore, I have heard the groaning of the sons of Israel because the Egyptians are holding them in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. God looked down and saw the cruelty of a system that enslaved people to make themselves wealthy. And God says, I'm about to move and to right some wrongs. Exodus 6, 6-7. Say therefore to the sons of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from their bondage. I will also redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. Then I will take you for my people, and I will be your God, and you will know that I am the Lord your God, who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. There you go. He is the ultimate freedom fighter, the ultimate deliverer, the ultimate one who is just and righteous in all of his ways. And he's not only done this for Israel, he's done it for other people groups. You can read about it in the later prophets. He has done this same exact thing for other people. He champions the cause of the downtrodden, the oppressed, the disenfranchised. And he raises up their banner and he makes a way for them over and over and over. He is our hope. Through him, he gives us deliverance. Through him, you and I are called to participate in that great pursuit of justice. Fast forward to the ultimate freedom fighter, Jesus the Messiah. Let's look at Luke chapter 4, verses 14 through 17. There have been some scholars that have pointed out that this particular year that he started his ministry was actually a jubilee year. So let's look at this, verse 14. And Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread throughout all the surrounding district. And he began teaching in the synagogues and was praised by all. And he came to Nazareth, where he stood up, where he had been brought up. And as was his custom, he entered the synagogue on the Sabbath and stood up to read. And the book of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. And he opened the book and found the place where it was written. So we have the Torah portion. You know what the Torah portions look like. They're pretty big, right? So he gets to the Torah portion, and then he works through the Torah portion because he wants to read a particular part of that Torah portion. So he reads down to himself, finding the place that he wants to read on this particular Sabbath, which is in a jubilee year and will mark the beginning of his ministry. It will describe and reveal his heart, his mission, his purpose. So he reads, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the good news. To who? To the poor. You know, when you have more money than you could ever spend, you know, I have a lot of needs. The scriptures are clear that it's hard for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. Why? He doesn't have many needs. It's not like he's going to call in the name of the Lord anytime soon. That's a disadvantage of being uber rich, if you will. And I'm not against the rich. You know, I'm like Tevye. You know, if riches are a curse, now be cursed and never recover, or something like that, you know? He came to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. The year of Jubilee, the Jubilee year, the year in which we what? We distribute all the wealth to everyone, the reset button, starting afresh, a new beginning, a new generation. This was the heart of Messiah. This would describe and encapsulate his purpose, his ministry. Luke 4:20-21. He closed the book, he gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of all in the synagogue were fixed on him, and he began to say to them, today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. We'll work this in the weeks ahead. But in conclusion, I want to say this. Social justice. Social justice is a foundational pillar in our mandate. Given to us by the Most High God. It includes spiritual as well as natural principles and blessings. It's not only about forgiveness of sin and reconciliation with God. It's all about, it's also about our needs here on earth. Give us this day our daily bread. Make making a living, raising a family, owning a home. All of these things are important. There are human needs that we all share. And God is just as concerned with the natural ground as he is the spiritual realm. In Moses and Jesus, the realm of heaven and earth came together. And those needs that are focused upon are both in this realm and in heaven's realm. We see this in the life of Moses and in the life of Dr. Martin Luther King and every Torah-based social activist in between. This is part of our call as individuals and, more importantly, collectively as a community of faith. And in light of this, I encourage you to follow the example of Martin Luther King Jr. and become, like him, a Moses of our day. You and I, to understand that we're a representative of heaven, that we're to be a Moses, that we're to address social injustices around us, that we are the champion and needs of the downtrodden and the poor. That's what we're called to do. Yeah, and if you can gain some wealth, do it. Wealth is not a curse. But always keep in mind those around you. Speak up and speak out on the moral and social injustices of our day. Be a truth teller, but do it with the love of the Father. And recognize and help those in bondage, whether it is spiritual or financial. Debt is bondage. And if you have enough debt, you understand how real that bondage is. Most of us cannot relate to Martin Luther King. Most of us cannot relate to the social injustice against black people in America in our history. And I'm not here to throw a guilt trip on you for not being able to relate to that. I can't relate to that. The obvious point is this, that we who have not shared in that, but have had a chance to really excel, should be the ones that champion those injustices, come to the aid of those injustices. The strong should help those who are oppressed. Who else will help them? If not us, who else? See, the brilliance of Dr. King was that he gathered everyone together. The strong and the weak. He made it a human rights movement. And that struggle goes on today. There are still injustices that need to be addressed today. I want to make sure that we as a congregation don't hide our heads in the sand and only talk about spiritual heavenly things, only banking on that which is in the future. I hope that you and I will also resonate and understand we're here to bring heaven to earth. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. To bring that hope and those ideals and those principles to everyone around us. And as we do that in small ways and collectively in larger ways, we will make a difference in this world. This is our calling. This is who we are to be. So, let's learn to fight for everyone's right, to be treated equally before the law, to champion everyone's right to equal economic opportunities, and to demand a reformation of monetary policy that includes debt forgiveness every 7 years on every loan, and also a jubilee year. We have Congress men and women that are all right now are introducing these concepts of jubilee in Congress, recognizing the widespread unrest that is growing in our nation due to economic injustice, due to an economic system that actually is penalizing the people and enriching a few. So all of this is being stirred up in our nation. I want us to study and explore the wisdom and compassion and righteousness of the wealth redistribution as envisioned in God's Jubilee year, and to speak to our leaders and our country. Just like Bobby Lee said back in the 60s, times, they are changing. We, the people of the book, we have work to do in helping our nation conform to the ideals of the Creator who has created each human being in His image. And as a God imager, we are to imagine His ways and then create governing systems that wisely implement them for the betterment of all people everywhere. So this weekend, I recommend that you watch. And don't come back and say, I was offended. Okay? Don't watch it if you think you're going to be offended. Just don't watch it. I don't want to be bugged about this. But if you'll leave me alone, I recommend you watch 12 Years a Slave, The Butler, and Selma. And then think of what God has instructed concerning human rights and how can establish governments that will legislate in a way that will ensure and protect these precious inalienable human rights that we all long for. Imagine how great our nations can become as we come more and more in alignment with the Creator and His ways. The fight continues. It beckons us. Let's make our mark in this great cause of God to bring good news to the poor, the debt-ridden, the captive, the hurting, and the confused. Let's take our stand for them on their behalf and move the ball forward down the field of social and moral justice. So I'm going to close with a different version of the song that we started with today. It's a different version of the same song, and I want you to think again and resonate with the heart of God as it relates to our responsibility. We who are strong, we who are healthy, we who have the knowledge of God, our responsibility for all of those around us. And may you be inspired this weekend, may you be encouraged this weekend, and may you learn to model in your life what we've seen in Moses and in Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron and his son, saying, this is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Say to them, may Yahweh bless you and keep you. May Yahweh make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May Yahweh lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And we add, in the name of Yeshua our Messiah, the Prince of Peace, so you shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them. Yivarech Adonai Ve'ishmerecha Yaher Adonai Panavalecha Ve'ihunecha Isa Adonai Panavalecha Ve'asemlecha Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.
You've been listening to the Shabbat message delivered by Senior Pastor Mark McClellan. We hope you have found this teaching relevant and challenging for your life. If you are in the Metro Denver area, please join us on Shabbat. Service starts at 1 p.m. and ends at 3 p.m. Kehila Tenuva is located at 8891 Pose Boulevard in Thornton, Colorado, just a few miles north of downtown Denver. For more information, please visit www.graftedin.com. That's www.graftedin.com. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 29993, Thornton, Colorado, 80229. For inquiries, please call 303-761-9948 or email info@graftedin.com. Thank you for listening to the Shabbat message. Shabbat Shalom and Shavua Tov. Shabbat.